As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This episode of Bushwick Breakaway is brought to you by you. A little bit of Social Boy, I think. I don't know. What a weird week. A lot of news, if you consider no news, news. Great. Got Hockey Statminer on. Have a little fun conversation with him about hashtag the vision and some other nonsense as per always. Thank you all for supporting, and let's get to the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Bushwick Breakaway fans, welcome to the week of the Bushwick Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Beat. I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. We are both of TheAthletic.com, where you can go subscribe for a dollar today. That's right. I think that was a native ad. Gregory, say hello.
Come home yesterday, or mid-afternoon, from a weekend in the woods with some friends.
Okay.
Great weekend, disconnected from the world, but very tired, as you would expect.
Best feeling, though, to disconnect. Like, one of the best.
Put my shit down immediately. Mm-hmm. Go down to my little betting notebook to write the bets I had won and lost for the weekend.
So Gregory.
As I'm finishing writing in this betting notebook, Ryan, on the windowsill, I see a massive bee. Just big ass motherfucker.
Quick shout out to the big spider that used to be in your window.
Yeah, I've moved. Yes. Different apartment. So I seeded the deed to that building to the spider, gave up, moved.
Yep.
This bee, I don't like bees. We don't agree. They lean one way, I lean the other politically. We don't, there's no middle ground for us. Every time I see a story about the bees dying and how it's bad for the world, I'm the guy in the background you might hear. Anyway.
To be or not
this
to be.
Bee, Ryan, I'm just too tired to deal with it. Too fucking tired. Figured it's been in the house all weekend. It'll figure itself out, right?
Yeah.
Go to bed. Wake up today, half hoping that the bee would be in the exact same spot. You know it's not.
Of course.
So now there's just this big-ass motherfucker hanging around somewhere in the house. Mm-hmm. I got no idea where he is. No idea.
And he's hunting you right now? Is that our cold open for today?
I believe so. I assume that bee has read every Tom Clancy book that's ever been in existence, and he's plotting some shit.
He heard you talking. Don't think he didn't hear. Every single time, he was taking notes. What if all the bees go extinct? Oh, yeah, Gregory Kaplan going to his house.
Yeah, I now announce myself whenever I walk into a room to let the bee know that he can't surprise me.
Right.
So we have that's how I'm doing today. My Monday.
We have a great show today. It is quiet in Rangers Town. We've done many, many shows during quiet times for Rangers Town. We are still waiting for Ryan Strome, anything to drop in that point, or Brendan Lemieux in that case. So we won't really be talking about them much today until we get to Hockey Statminer, who is our good dear friend who's coming on for a nice chit-chat about the vision, the offseason, and everything like that. That all being said, Gregory, today, the only news I could dig up today was from our friend AJ on Twitter. He did a running dialogue of the live Zoom press conference with Alexi Lafreniere and Braden the Josh Schneider. Supposedly, here's things I've learned. I wrote down a couple notes. Lafreniere is a giant gummy bear guy, which I think is a weird move.
No, I don't think it's a weird move. He's still a child, so he's still in the phase in which gummy bears are delicious.
Do you grow out of gummy bears? Is that a thing?
I think you grow into a phase where the gummy bear now needs to have some, like, THC in it.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah, no, that shout out to New Jersey. See what happens there. all right, now let's go to the next actual point. So JD also stopped by and said, you know, these two players are great leaders. What do you expect him to say? But he did answer a question on two important topics, which I thought were worth nosy to actually talk about on the podcast. First, this was JD on signing Jack Johnson. We were looking for a penalty-killing defenseman. Pitt was 10th in the league last year, and JJ is a workout fiend. He hits the gym a lot. And these young players are going to see how it's done and how hard you have to work and how much time you have to put in. So the guy really is into weightlifting. So there you go. That's why we signed him. He's a PK defenseman.
Yeah, the PK point, again, it's John Davidson can say that, and it's factually correct. The Pittsburgh Penguins were a great penalty-killing
team. No lie.
Which is why it's great that Jacques Martin is here with the New York Rangers. He's going to help the Rangers tremendously in that regard. But every time anyone brings up that point, it's important to point out that the Pittsburgh Penguins penalty kill was significantly worse when Jack Johnson was on the ice for them.
Have to
their penalty kill without Jack Johnson would have been one of the three best in the league. So, yes, it was a top 10 penalty kill unit in the league. That is true. No one can refute it. But it is also irrefutable that when Jack Johnson was killing penalties with the Pittsburgh Penguins, they simply were not as good. They were closer to average than they were top of the league.
And season ticket holders on that Zoom call, how dare you not have a follow-up with that journalistic question?
God damn it.
I listen to Blue Shirts Breakaway. I know the stats. They're worse with JJ on the PK. There you go. I agree with you, Gregory, there. No surprise. And the other thing that JD happened to talk about during this press conference that I thought was of note was Jesper Fast. Now, this kind of confirms our suspicions and even something of a rant, not rant, rather the opinion you gave on this podcast. Sometimes you rant, but I think this was more of an opinion.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The quote was, that was a long conversation. Jesper Fast is a great hockey player and a very good person. Can you give a good person a long contract when you have people coming up on the right side? You just have to make changes and move along. We're obviously going to miss him. So they feel like they have too many young, different opportunities. It was more about term than it was about the contract. And we kind of dissected that a couple weeks ago back, but this just confirms it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing really else there. I'm going to miss Jesper. It's going to be tough without him, especially on the penalty kill, but God bless all these people having to do that moving forward. Let's move on to the other news of the week, which I think is just Vitaly Kravtsov. That's literally it. Injured for a very long time, came back to the KHL, continues to sort of light it up while we sleep, quote unquote, from our good friend AJ Ranger, who's a good giffer. Give him a follow. And is it weird calling someone a good giffer? That feels strange. I don't know.
You do you, man.
Thank you. Anyway, so AJ's a good giffer. In that point, Vitaly Kravtsov seems to be moving along just fine. I don't really have much analysis onto what he's doing. I'm sure we'll talk to Hockey Statminer about what his role could be in the future. But if I'm being perfectly honest, I would just like to see him continue to be good. And there's nothing else, other analysis I could bring from Kravtsov playing well in the KHL. It's all positive signs. I still think he'll play the entire season in the KHL and then come over.
Yeah, he's healthy. He's scoring. I don't know what else anyone really wants at this point in time.
It's really that. Like, that's it.
Do you want him to also create a vaccine for the coronavirus while he's over there?
Would be nice.
That's just about all. That's all else he could do, I guess.
Right.
That would directly help the Rangers.
That's it. That's the only thing he can do. Get the hockey season started at this point in time and get a date. I can't. The only other thing I hear I have in my notes for the Open, Gregory, is that the NBA has sort of set a date for the return of play. And this is all subject to change. We're not fools here. We know that this is all up in the air in this case. But I believe their date is December 22nd. I could be wrong. Let me double check again. But
no, I actually just saw, I want to say it was on The Ringer that I saw that date pop up. And then someone was interviewing Danny Green about how he felt in terms of that date sticking. And Danny Green's general consensus was like, if you want that to be the date, none of the top guys are going to play for a month. And he specifically said LeBron James would probably not want to play until sometime in mid-January. So he'll just sit the first month of the season out. So needless to say, Ryan, don't think that's going to be the date. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, that was a quick retort to my story. But I my point here was, I wonder if the NHL will follow in that steed after you've said that. I don't believe.
Well, so the NHL's already announced that, you know, they're essentially not starting before January 1st. And nobody believes they'll be able to start on January 1st. So if you follow the tea leaves, and if you follow enough people that say they have insiders, people just continue to hear a February date. So I'm just going to continue to believe a Valentine's Day start to the season. And I will have to be convinced otherwise at this point.
I think I'm with you. There's so much in play right now, and a lot in the air to see, especially with the Canadian government. And it depends on what they do with the coronavirus testing at the borders, which they said they might change that this week. So there's a lot there has to be solved. With the NBA, they only have one Canadian team. So that wouldn't be the issue, because they probably just play in the USA, similar to what happened in the MLB. But when it comes to the NHL, and you may not believe this, there's a lot of Canadian teams, so that does play a big part into this. Other than that, I have literally no hot takes about the Rangers this week. It is dry out there, and we'll be talking about the vision with our good friend Hockey Stat Miner. Gregory, the one question I want to follow up with you, and maybe we'll talk more about this when it comes to the five-star questions segment later. How hard was it watching the World Series when the Mets were there? Because I have to tell you, I'm dying.
Oh, it was the worst. It's not a fun experience, dude.
No. I had a miserable weekend. I want to say this. Yeah. It was...
Game four was unlike anything I've ever seen. I can't compare it to another game I've ever watched.
Gregory, elated. I couldn't go to bed. I stayed up till 3:30 a.m. I was like, oh my God, the Rays are going to do it. This is incredible. I was like in tears. And then game five happened, and I was like, oh no. Like, I couldn't play off Kershaw come hang out one more time. And it just, they had so many chances and just couldn't make it happen. But it's been an emotional ride all week, and now we go to game six. And we'll talk more baseball back at the end, so you guys don't have to hear this if you're listening for Rangers. But it made me think for a second. When was the last time I felt this way about a hockey game? And I think it was the Ottawa series. Like, I think...
No, see, here's the difference between... I've said this on the podcast before, mm-hmm. so I'll say it again now.
Yeah.
Baseball, as someone who has a rooting interest in a team and play, is unlike any of the other sports. Like, because in basketball, in hockey, in football, there are ebbs and flows in the game. There are moments where something could happen, but the stress isn't there with every waning second. There are moments in a hockey game where you're kind of able to relax just a little bit. With baseball, it's the unpredictability of every pitch and how every pitch is more important than the pitch previous. It's impossible to find a down moment. Utterly impossible. There's no such thing as a safe lead. There's no such thing as a throwaway pitch. There's no situation that makes you feel safe and secure. There are times in playoff hockey games where you're kind of just going with the flow, rolling with the wave, and you're going through the motions. It doesn't exist in baseball.
If you're up 3-0 in hockey, most of the time, I kind of agree with you. Like, where you could, like, kind of hopefully coast to a playoff win. I wonder if you ask Carolina fans out there how stressed they were when they beat the living hell out of the Rangers this play-in season. And I can imagine it was very much not stressed. I kind of agree with you in the aspect of, like, every single pitch has been brutal for my brain and my emotions. But there are like very few times in hockey, especially when you become totally relaxed. Like they are there, you can get more relaxed. But in a one goal game, usually I would say that the intensity is matched, especially in a game seven overtimes, etc. You know how that goes. But it is strenuous to survive a World Series, and it's been really, really tough. I don't know if I'll ever get back, and that's why I'm trying to win this one. It's hard.
Yeah, I don't think anything comes close to playoff baseball in terms of constant level of stress. Ranger hockey,
overtime has to be close. Overtime hockey, especially game seven.
No, but I'm not talking about...
You're talking about the entire
game. Yeah, but at the same time, bases loaded, nobody out, and a one-run lead in a baseball game. I'm talking about just baseline level of stress where you start the game.
It's
no other sport starts higher stress than baseball. Everything, every pitch in baseball is a nightmare. There are moments in hockey games, in a normal playoff hockey game, that you can relax a little bit. That moment does not exist in baseball.
It's crazy.
It's not there.
But the,
I'm not saying a game seven overtime. I'm not saying a one goal.
Our good friend is here. Hold on. Let's take a quick break and transition, and then hold on. Don't say anything yet. Then I'll introduce you. Okay. Here we go. We'll be right back. Transition.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, we're back with our first and only guest of the day. We have our good friend Hockey Statminer, who's here to recap the whole off season and chill with the boys. How are you doing, HSM? Can I call you that?
Mika's fine. I low key hate that handle name, by the way.
Do you? That makes me want to say it more.
It's like in the ether now, so I can't change it. But
all right. Well, how do you spell it, Mika? In this case, M-I-K-K-A. What are you doing?
You know, an M and then yada yada yada. Okay. An A and, you know, yeah. Whatever you got to do.
Okay, but just get it done. I like that attitude. We were talking briefly right before we started recording about the week Henrik Lundqvist got bought out by the New York Rangers, and a good time. You know, it feels like months ago at this point. And we were recapping what happened that week. Can you remember things that went wrong that week for me? Out of curiosity.
No, I was telling Ryan before the break. It's like, okay, Hank gets bought out. Like, it sucks for all of us, you know, sentimental.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Ryan, I'm just, like, imagining Ryan, like, oh, this week can't get any worse. And then Vince comes out, like, the next couple of days, like, by the way, I'm starting a podcast. I'm going to try and eat into the Rangers podcast market share.
Then first, then says the city's big enough for the two of us. Clearly it is not. It's a ghost town, and no one's there anymore. So I'm trying to scrounge up all the New York Ranger fans I can. It's tough out here. Can't live. Fucking Vince, man. Let's get right into the nitty-gritty of weird things. Who are your remaining free agents, if any, the Rangers could sign or say hello to? Some Vatanen rumors the other day? Some scratches and crumbs out there? Do you have anything on the plate that you're cooking up in that respect?
Free agents.
You could say no right away.
What's that?
You could say no.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, you know, there's that kind of bargain bin of like guys that didn't get contracts early on and they signed for way less than they probably should later on. But the thing with the Rangers is, like, once we're kind of waiting on the Strome and Lemieux deals to come through, but, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, once those two get done, it's kind of like Rangers have a full plate. So at least from a salary cap standpoint, it's like, I don't know. I mean, you know, you could always add someone for, like, super cheap, but, like, at least the operating assumption I have now is they're gonna tie up Strome, they're gonna tie up Lemieux, and then, like, that's kind of it. Like, maybe trades happen, maybe, like, they'll sign, you know, someone who shouldn't be a free agent right before this, you know, who knows, but, like, the salary cap really is a point where it's, like, they can't really move much without, you know, it's like a puzzle where it's like you have to move one piece to put another in. You know, they're kind of stuck.
Yeah, it seems
in the non-Jack Johnson category here, was there a move the Rangers didn't make this offseason that kind of surprised you?
You know, I really thought that Smith would go instead of Staal. Like, obviously, Staal caught us all by surprise. It's like, I didn't even know he could be traded. I thought he had a full.
I thought that wasn't allowed.
Yeah, I know. Just goes to show how much we know. But yeah, like, I would have bet, like, okay, if the Rangers are going to trade a kind of clunky contract defenseman to free up some space. Like, it would totally be Smith to a low-budget team like Ottawa, because his contract is front-loaded. He's in the last year, so his cap hit is way higher than his actual salary, and teams that are operating on internal budget would be attracted to that. But being moved and Smith still being here, like that kind of is like, wow, wouldn't have guessed that. But here we are.
Here we are. One question I've kind of been wondering with you is, you're a cap wizard, you're a spreadsheet manifester. I was trying to think of other cool things to call you, but I couldn't. So that's it,
there's,
I guess.
No cool thing.
Yeah, that's it. Is there something that's like a misconception that you get a lot? Like, what's the question you get a lot that you have to explain more than anything else? If there is any.
About the cap?
About, like, you know, like, what if someone's on your spreadsheet and they're looking and you have, like, all this, you know, looking towards the future, 2021, 2022, et cetera, and you have, like, these wonderful sheets that show everything. What's the one question that you, like, are sick of answering in your life?
Well, hashtag the vision has got to be up there. I mean, that's, like...
I guess we'll get into it now.
I'll get, like, people... Yeah, no, I mean, that's... I can't tell you how many times people like are like tag me and they're like hashtag the vision, and it's like, that's not it. The vision, actually, it was coined by Fitz, believe it or not, like a couple of years ago. And it was a running joke that kind of became a thing where the Rangers kind of like eat a bad contract or something, but they get a draft pick for it. And that's like kind of the name of the game of the rebuild. Like, if you're a rich team rebuilding. But now I have people like be like, oh, you know, trade Strome for a second round pick, like hashtag the vision. And it's like, no, that's something totally different. That's something that, you know, is plausible. I can kind of explore that, but that's not the vision. But as far as this season, the performance bonus stuff has kind of been a kitschy thing, where it's kind of complicated and it's kind of hard to explain, like in a sheet. In the cap sheet. But basically what it is if a team has enough performance bonuses up to a certain level, it's 7.5% of the cap ceiling. So doing the math, it's like 6.1 million. If you have more than that, everything over that kind of counts against you, but it doesn't. In this case, it's the Rangers have all these wonderful young contracts, but the performance bonuses are like, I don't know, like 10 or 11 million or whatever it is. So everything above 6.1, it kind of counts against the cap, but it doesn't. It's like money they can't spend, but as those players earn performance bonuses, you know, Kako, Igor, Lafreniere, a lot of people have little ones. As they earn those, that overage is going to, like, kind of, those bonuses will eat into that money charged against, but technically they just can't spend it until the end of the season. But it's really hard to explain.
Yeah, I still don't get it that much. I know that they can only spend a certain amount because of the bonuses, and that's where I was confused. I even saw, like, some pretty, like, who I thought were in-the-know, like, hockey people that going into the free agency were like, wow, the Rangers have so much cap space to do whatever they want, and that just was not the case.
Right, yeah, and it's like, how do I explain it? It was kind of made so that there's two ways you can get performance bonuses. You can be a rookie and, like, get performance bonuses, or you can be over 35 and get performance bonuses. And the idea was kind of like, okay, well, you can't stack the team with, you know, Joe Thornton and Henrik Lundqvist and, you know, all these guys where you pay them nothing, like, as base salary, but then, you know, oh, they play 40 games, they get $5 million. Like, you can't do that. But with the Rangers, it's kind of this, like, it's very uncommon for a team to have this many high-quality entry-level contracts. So basically, long story short, this team is going to have a $4 million overage in performance bonuses. So that kind of counts against the cap with them. But at the end of the season, whoever earns what, like if Laf, you know, dominates and, yep, like earns his $2.5 million, if Igor dominates and earns his, you know, $2.5 million, like that month, that overage, like that'll take care of it. Like there won't be a bonus. There won't be a carryover to next season. But in the meantime, like you have to treat that money like it's already being spent. Does that make sense?
Yep. I think so. Gregory, do you get it?
I do.
No.
You keep putting money into your Roth IRA and you can't take it out. And if you take it out, you get penalized.
Got it. That's how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's how I'll think about it. So it's just the Rangers keep putting more money in their Roth IRA.
You can't.
And at the end of the year, the Roth IRA will close. The Rangers will get that money back, maybe with a little interest on it, bing, bang, boom. But that money's not available to them right now.
Like, it would be a bad idea to take all your money out of your Roth IRA and put it on Lafreniere being the Calder, right? Because that's stupid.
You guys shouldn't joke about the Irish Republican Army. I'm just saying that right now.
No, but it's the Tim Roth Irish Republican Army, so we're doing fine.
Got it.
No, it's... And also, just like as like a cap nerd for the Rangers, like... This has never been anything like, never have the Rangers had like stacked entry level contract upon stack, you know. So this is kind of like new territory for us. It has kind of happened with other teams, but literally the CBA kind of didn't expect a team to have this many stacked ELCs. That's kind of like the more or less of it. And the Rangers are kind of a little more handcuffed because of it.
I guess the Lightning didn't really have this either because a lot of their potential superstars were from later than the first round too. So it's not like they had those bonus deals.
Right. Yeah. Like it really is like more of a, it's like draft pedigree. Like if you're taking like at the tippy top of the draft, like you're going to get it. But it's also the dudes that do 4 years of college and then become free agents. Like Kevin Hayes had a max, but he was like the only one. Right.
Got it.
The way it works, it's 7.5% of the cap ceiling. So 7.5% of 81.5, like it's not usually you have to try, you have to like go out of your way to try to puncture it. But the Rangers have just had such, you know, success really with getting these young players in such a short period of time. This year is like kind of a burden for it, but next year it's going to like shave off a lot because Igor is going to be done. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the max. And it'll probably be a little bit next year, but like not, you know, a $4 million performance bonus overage is like, I don't know the exact history, but it's got to be crazy. It's got to be up there. You know what I mean?
When does the narrative of Kako's performance bonus is actually hurting this team's chances to win start? When people start turning on the Lord and Savior himself this year? I'm just trying to make up new NHL conspiracies. That's kind of my new gig.
I'm down with conspiracies. Don't worry about that. Next year it's going to wind down because Igor is going to be off his contract, so that's going to like shave $3 million off the performance bonuses.
Okay, okay.
Nils Lundqvist, if he comes over, he'll probably get some, assuming Keandre Miller is a roster regular. Like he'll have some, but. This is the worst it's going to be. I'll put it that way. Like, next year, maybe it'll be, like, $1 or $2 million or whatever it is.
Doesn't help that they have, like, $80 million in dead cap space from buyouts, so.
Right, yeah.
That kind of hurts.
Next year's going to, like, next summer is going to be, like, this weird, like, you know, imagine walking around next year with 5-pound ankle weights and then, like, you know, July 1st or whatever, they get taken off. Like, that's how it's going to be, yeah, really.
All right, well, I guess one of the things I want to talk about also with you at this point in time is, do you think the contention window is sort of open next year? Because this year, I think we could all agree, like, maybe this year is still another year for hashtag division, which I used that wrong because we're not taking any contracts or anything like that. But to use your terminology as eating shit for draft picks. And I think in this case, losing another year where you're terrible is sort of... eating shit for draft picks. You talked about just a second ago, hey, I like NHL conspiracies. Did we sign Jack Johnson for the vision to get one more high draft pick? I'm out here grinding. I'm making content. What do you want?
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, the perfect definition of the vision is what Detroit did to us. Like, Detroit the visioned us, where they eat 1 year of stall and they get a second round pick. But no, as far as the contention window, yeah, it's really going to open up next summer, not only because the Rangers have a bunch of dead cap evaporate, but you're also going to be on the other side of the expansion draft. And that's really important because it's like, if you've tried to trade, you know, let's say Gurdjieff, D'Angelo, Buchnevich, you know, whoever, the whole market is revolved around, you know, hey, we have to be able to protect whoever we get. You know, how much can we offer for a guy where he's going to cost one of these limited protection spots? So as soon as that's over, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, the Rangers have a lot of dead cap going off, but it's also like this kind of inherent trade barrier that the expansion draft represents that's lifted. All of a sudden, you know, teams that were maybe interested in Gurdjieff this year, but it's like, oh, well, we have to protect him, so maybe we don't want to offer as much as we could. Like, that's gone. So, yeah, next year is going to be totally different. As far as Jack Johnson, Johnson and, I guess, Strome, if you want to, like, maybe guess. I'm guessing he's going to get a one-year deal. We don't know, but that's kind of a good guess. Those guys can totally get traded at the deadline, and the Rangers get picks. But, you know, it just seems so silly to trade Mark Stahl for a second-round pick to get 1 year of cap space so you can afford Strome, so you can trade Strome and hopefully get what, like, the same pick. I mean, if you get a late first for Strome at the deadline, that's like a marginal upgrade from what we paid to get rid of Stahl to keep Strome in the first place. That whole Stahl trade thing, like, that was just such a, that was like I think we were all cool with, like, okay, Rangers don't have cap space. They're going to peel another year, a lot of dead cap, and then we'll change gears next summer. And that whole Stahl trade, it was like, it really threw me for a loop. I think it threw most of us for a loop.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a good point you bring up, though, about the Stahl trade and Strome, because the belief from a lot of people, us included, is that the New York Rangers don't see Ryan Strome as a long-term piece of the future. It's a big reason why there hasn't been long-term contract talks with him. It's a big reason why his name's been out in trade rumors. Jeff Gordon himself on draft day basically said, look, we didn't get anything we liked, so we didn't trade him. But you know we were talking about him. Say the Rangers are bad again next year, which I think the three of us would agree they're probably going to be. So that second-round pick is going to be somewhere between, we would think, the 40 to 45 range probably.
Right, yeah, I get that.
And Ryan Strome, the only teams that are going to be interested in him are going to be a contender. Are the Rangers even likely to move up 15 spots in the draft in a Ryan Strome trade when all things are considered?
You know, it kind of reminds me of, like, a couple of years ago when the Rangers went out and got McQuaid. I forget the exact pick. But, like, they traded a pick for one McQuaid's last contract year, and they played him, and then they traded him for the deadline. And they got the same pick back, but because it was a contender, they, like, basically they moved down in whatever, like, third round, fourth round, whatever it was. They moved down in the fourth round for 1 year of McQuaid. And it's kind of just like, couldn't you just sign a defenseman free agent and just keep your pick? I mean, like, the whole point, like, if the Rangers are just going to peel a card off the deck and just kind of make their moves next summer, like, why wouldn't you just hold on to that second round pick? And I mean, I guess, you know, the money's tight, but the whole point of peeling a card off the deck and kind of being marginal next year, let's say, is you, like, the one benefit is, like, you get rewarded in the draft. So trading the 40th or 45th overall pick to get rid of Stahl and you keep Strome and you use the savings on Johnson. It's just one of those, like, lateral at best moves. You know what I mean? Like, that was the whole season. That was the whole story of the offseason. Was it's like, at best, it's a lateral move at best.
Right. They feel like they have the pieces already in place. I mean, they already have, like you said, we're loaded with ELCs and young emerging players, but you always want to be moving towards that. We're building towards a dynasty goal. And that wasn't really like what we consider gaining value. It might've been lost value, but it wasn't exactly gaining value either. And I wonder if they feel like they gained value with JJ, but that's what I'm calling him now, by the way, JJ. And we're close. If I wonder if I gaining value by JJ, bringing, like, the leadership and, like, work ethic, et cetera, Or I'm not really sure. Or they gain value going back to my conspiracy because by getting a higher draft pick next year by having him on the team.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact that they hired Martin and, like, Johnson has played in Pittsburgh, like, it's probably just, you know, Johnson's his boy, and they're probably over. Like, the weirdest thing, like, the fucking weirdest thing with the Rangers is, like, defensemen. It's like Lundqvist and Miller look like these terrific late first-round picks. And then they'll go out and, you know, they'll pay a second-round pick to replace Stahl with Johnson. Like, it's like this weird, like, thing where it's, like, hit or miss. You know what I mean?
Well, the Penguins just did this, too. I mean, you know, they got rid of Johnson. They bought him out so we could have him. And then they went out and did something similar to we did. So,
yeah, right. They signed Cody Ceci, which is everybody loves that.
Like, welcome to the NHL. Yeah. The Rangers didn't sign Johnson. They signed Ceci. You know, and other people have said this, but the one thing with me is, like, you know, like they could have signed John Merrill. Like, oh, that would have been so good. Like, the same money, same term. He signed for a little less in Detroit. Like, oh, that would, like, I'm basically of the opinion that if you replace Stahl and Howden with, like, quote unquote replacement level players, like, you'll see a difference pretty goddamn quick. And just to do that, to get Stahl off the books and then replace, you know, obviously their whatever remained of that cap savings they've spent on Johnson, it's like, oh, lateral move at best, man. I mean, John, you know, I'm not the first one to say Johnson's brutal.
Really?
Brutal.
Whoa, hold on. Let me break this. Breaking news. Mika says Jack Johnson is brutal. Okay. Aggregators, go ahead.
You brought up, you did bring up the man rocket who can get it.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you are of the same opinion that I am. I have now convinced myself to no end that the last 2 years of the Rangers saying really nice things about him, giving him more opportunities than he's probably deserved or earned, this is all setting up for the Rangers to allow Seattle to take him and convince Seattle that they're getting a good player.
You know, if we're bringing up these fantasy drafts, this is how we stand, right? Let's assume that Strome signs a 1 year deal, right? He goes to arbitration. His arbitration has to be 1 year. It can't be 2 years. It has to be 1 year. So let's say Strome does 1 year and then whatever. The expansion draft is basically going to boil down to there's Julien Gauthier, Brett Howden, and Brendan Lemieux. The Rangers can protect two of those three. So one of those guys is going to get left out in the cold. And that's probably, like, the best option for Seattle. And this is, you know, this is obviously right now that we're a whole year away. So that's the brass tacks of it. I think it's optimistic to say, like, Rangers were planning ahead for the Seattle draft, like, you know, 2.5 years ahead, but whatever. But, like, yeah, that's like, as far as this season is concerned, it's Gauthier, Lemieux, Howden. And it's like one of those guys, like, is going to get left out in the cold. As far as we know right now, like, they could add someone or whatever, but that's the expansion draft, like, that's where we're at right now. And yeah, you know, honestly, I could totally see Lemieux and Gauthier protected, Howden left out in the cold. Who's Seattle going to take? It's like Howden,
Lieber
Hayek,
yeah,
or Kincaid. Like, that's your three. So,
well, let me tell you why Keith is the right person to take. Great guy, good personality, great in the locker room, great in social media. Like, hey, he'll kill it with the emoji game.
I was really happy when you signed him.
Good.
I was, like, super happy when they signed him because I'm like, oh, like, he's your guys' friend. Like, you have a friend on the Rangers now. How cool is that?
Yeah, he grew up a Ranger fan, so I think he's pretty excited. If he ever gets a start and we're allowed to be there, we'll be front row center, screaming our heads off, and he'll definitely hate it. So there you go. I just did the thing. I'm trying to stop saying but I can't do it. I don't know what's wrong with me. Actually, I know what's wrong with me. Everything. There you go. With that all being said, Elias Anderson was sort of traded at the draft. Did that surprise you at all?
No. I mean, it's kind of like the chances were that, like, he was going to get dealt. I thought maybe, like, one chance was, like, they would hold on to him because he was actually, if you talk about the expansion draft, like, he was expansion eligible.
Yeah.
So, like, if he, like, rebuilt his resume over in Europe, and then, you know, Seattle's looking at, oh, do we take, you know, Brett Howden, Lieber Hayek, or, you know, Elise Anderson, who just had a great year in Europe. I mean, like, you know, there's kind of, it almost like a floating bargaining chip maybe there to, like, not, because, you know, I mean, I think the writing was on the wall that Elias was not long for the Rangers franchise after he left so unceremoniously. But no, I mean, at the other hand, it's kind of like, you know, it makes sense that the Rangers would at this, you know, how much longer are the Rangers going to rebuild? We don't know, but it's probably, you know, more often than not, it's going to be less. So it's like, yeah, liquidate Elias while you could. A late second, though, is kind of like, I mean, you know, didn't we get more for Bob Sanguinetti than we did with Elias? Like, but, you know, it is what it is.
It is at this point. I mostly brought him up because I did think he would be, like, the potential pick for the Seattle expansion. But to get, I guess, a late second-round pick and a player that they like in Cooley, a very cool pick. Nice. Thanks, Ryan. it's a brutal week for us, okay? Just stick with
this
me.
A weekly basis I deal with this, Mika. You're here one Monday night. This is me every week.
Twice a week, actually, which makes it way worse. I'm sick of it, too.
I like to imagine you guys hate each other.
It's not so secret. It's we talk to each other only on the show. And
look, the things that made Mike and the Mad Dog so great in the late 90s, early 2000s, because those guys didn't like each other. And we're just trying to replicate that, and I think we're doing a great job.
It's true. It's true. We're out here grinding every single day, hating each other. We try and keep it, too. We have fights to purposely keep the intensity between us. It's like kind of like training. It's nice.
Are you guys still at the consecutive streak? Like,
yeah.
100?
Yes. Welcome to episode 258. 2 weeks from now, we will have our 5-year anniversary of never missing a show. And we have special guests lined up, such as nobody.
Yeah. Well, in my defense, again, I was in a cabin for a weekend.
I wasn't attacking you there, Greg, unfortunately. I just
this is the bullshit. Mika comes on here, starts stirring the pot.
I wasn't attacking
a little bit too much.
I promise.
Uh-huh. Oh, me? Couldn't be.
Couldn't be you. I'm sure we'll have
the guy who trades goods for elk meat is coming on here and disturbing shit.
20 pizzas is worth a deer. Period. End of story. Especially an 8-pointer. Oh. Just saying it. I've learned a lot about hunting.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but continue.
Okay. I could use that as the open of the show for the next 20 years, if we're alive. 20 years, like we'll be doing the show then. That's pretty funny. But yes, it's been an interesting offseason. I don't know what to expect, and I don't know when to expect hockey again. Do you have any – obviously, you're an expert analysis in not only economics, but also disease control. When do you expect the NHL to come back?
Well, I'm an expert in disease control in the sense that I take penicillin until it stops hurting the pee.
Great.
So that's my expertise.
Great job.
No.
happy to hear that you pee regularly. Good for you, man.
Oh, this show's got
off. Show off.
This got off the rails now.
This is not going to make it to air, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's making it to air.
Oh yeah.
Someone will yell at us that it made it.
Yeah.
To air,
no, we'll get a message that's like, "Hey, can you please take that out?" And then we'll take it out. Yep.
No, you know the one interesting thing is like if there's going to be a shortened season, which like there is. I mean, it's going to happen. It kind of benefits the crappier teams versus the better. Like if you're the best team in the league, like in theory, let's just say in theory, you want a 100-game season. You know what I mean? Because the more games you play, the less like luck factors in. So if you're the best of the best, the more you play, the less luck, you know, matters. Whereas if you're maybe the Rangers and you're kind of on the fringe and like it's kind of maybe you'll make the playoffs, maybe you won't. You know, a 40 or 50 game season could be huge. You know, one thing is like, think of Igor, where it's like, imagine if he just goes like out of his mind for a week or two. And you know, the game, you know, he could steal games. It's like, you know, if you steal a couple of games in a 40 or 50 game season, you know, that's like double of what it normally would be. So I do think of that where it's like, okay, if it's going to be a 48 game season, like who knows what swings. I mean, imagine if a play, whatever the team, imagine someone's hurt for a month in a 48 game season. Like that's huge. That's massive. So I do like think like people are, you know, I do tend to agree. It's like the Rangers better, like more or less the Rangers are probably going to be the same. It's like, who the hell knows, but it's like, that's what the offseason is telling me. But if it's going to be a shortened season, it's like, oh yeah. Like if you're not an elite team, like, oh yeah. Yeah. Let's roll the dice and let's hope for some good luck waves. So we'll see. I'm interested to see if, like, if Igor starts for, like, let's say, like, 75% of the games, like, what's that going to mean, like, in terms of standing points? You know what I mean? Like, if Igor really is, and I dare say, like, if Igor really is Hank 2.0, like, imagine Hank, like, think of Hank 10 years ago, where it's, like, you know, 2009, 2010, 2011, like, he dragged these sub-average teams to the playoffs, like, through sheer will, and it's, like, you know, 40, 50-game season. Like I could totally see Igor doing that. So that's my take as far as next season. I mean, who the hell knows?
One of the things I find most interesting there is like how it affects the game experience, because I think 82 games is too much. I've been on record saying this. I think the lesser amount of hockey games you have actually brings up the excitement for hockey fans and also increases the quality of games. Like I think the players will be more fresh, they'll be more active, and since the games matter more, and they clearly do, there'll be more of an emphasis to bring sort of your A game instead of sort of taking the nights off or going out and partying the night before. Like you know, they have the right to do whatever they'd like before games, but I think if they would take the season a little more seriously if it was 60-ish games. I don't think we're gonna get to 60, but I think we'll end up around the 70 number. Because I know, Gregory, what point you'll make here is that they're going to stop before the Olympics.
Well, it's not, they're not going to have a choice.
Right.
Like, if they want a major television provider to show their games, it's not going to be NBC, and NBC owns their rights. So at some point, the decision's going to get made for them. And you're going to get to a point in mid-July where contractually, NBC is going to tell them, nothing we can do. Congratulations, your games will be shuttered. Like, we're out. We have to cover the Olympics.
That's it. Mr. Mika, I saw you tweet the other day about group projects and how unfair they are. Do you realize that group projects just prepare you for the actual world? Where you have to drag people's ass? Ask Greg. He drags me every week.
You're really poking the bear here, Ryan. You know that, right?
I'm here. That's what do you want me to do? I'm hosting a show.
Yeah, free agency was 3 weeks ago. What are you gonna do?
I have nothing.
No.
If you want an actual Ranger question to bail you out of this not good question that Ryan just asked,
I got
you covered.
Okay, do one. Go ahead.
What the Rangers? We've talked about how much they're going to be almost essentially the exact same team on paper, with the exception of a new fourth line winger, a new Jack Johnson in the mold of Mark Stahl, and maybe one other new left-handed defenseman. Are there current Rangers that you want to see put in situations that will challenge their games and allow the Rangers to learn more about them on the fly? Like, for me personally, something I've talked about on this podcast too many times to count, but it feels like it's being set up for this year. I am dying to see Adam Fox on the penalty kill. And while I know the Rangers are going to look the exact same next year, that is one thing they can do to be different. Is there something in that vein you think the Rangers should be doing to appear different, even with the same pieces?
That's a good question. The two things that stand out to me are, number one, like the kind of idea that D'Angelo flips to the left side, and we'll see how he does there. Like, that could be a huge, huge, I don't know, audition or whatever you want to call it. Because it's, you know, the Rangers are so stacked on the right side with right-handed defensemen, where it's like, okay, you know, you have Trouba with an immovable contract, you have Fox, who, God willing, will give us McDonough years, and it's like almost like D'Angelo is like almost like the odd man out and is like not long, but if he can play serviceably on the left side, that'll change a lot of things. So if they actually do like move D'Angelo to the left, and he, you know, that'll be huge, whether he can do it or not or whatever. That's one thing. The other thing is Hedl, where it's like the Rangers have these, like, if we're thinking like long term, how Hedl does next year, like, could, like, you know, be this huge linchpin. Because let's say Strome signs a 1-year deal, and in any event, he'll be gone next summer. You know, it's like, okay, and the Rangers are going to shift gears to open that window of contention next summer. It's like, okay, are we dealing with Zibanejad, who's the first center, and then, like, can Hedl play second center? Is he going to be still the third center with upside? I mean, granted, he's still young. He's 21. Of course, you have Zibanejad, who's then going to be a year away. So, like, there's, like, this, like, butterfly effect with, like, how the Rangers are going to deal with their centers going forward through the next 1, 2, 3 years. And I really do think that if Hedl just, like, takes this huge step and it's like, okay, window can open next year and Hedl can be the number two center, that's going to, like, be, like, door A. But if it's like, he's 21, he's kind of conservatively growing, like, he didn't take a huge step, we'll put him on the third center to open the window next summer, that'll be, like, door B. So those are the two linchpins as far as, like, the long-term, you know, what is our decision process going to be? Those are, like, two of, like, the huge, like, you know, if D'Angelo thrives on the left side versus he can't cut it, or Hedl's like, oh, yeah, he can be a second center, you know, 18 months from now versus, like, no, we have to treat him like a third center, you know, until he proves otherwise. Those could be huge pivotal moments as far as the Rangers and all their options that open up next summer.
I think that's it for me, Gregory. Final, now
you don't want him to talk about group projects?
No, I'm good. I think that was a great final question. Do you have anything else you'd like to ask our dear friend Meek?
I cannot tell you how much I hate group projects. Like, I
no, tell
I,
me.
I cannot tell you. I hate them.
It's just the real world, man. You got to drag people that suck all the time.
I will just add.
You're just trying to get me to, like, get angry, and, like, you shouldn't be doing that because I've had a few drinks.
I had this conversation the other day, and I was like, because I was on your side, but then I was like, wait a second, that is the real world. So there you go.
Oh my god.
Foot dives.
I'm going to wring your neck, Ryan. You know that, right? Yeah. Like, someday I'm going to find you.
I'm in Philadelphia. You can find me. I'm hanging out. Come chill. We'll have a couple. That's it.
What was Mika? What was the beer of choice tonight, or was it a hard liquor kind of night?
No. It's Blue Moon.
Oh, you know, the classic.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's like, it's half mainstream, but it's also, like, you know, not piss beer. So
yeah, I get it. All right, man. Thanks so much for coming on, chat a little bit of Rangers with us, and I'm sure we'll talk to you sometime soon, probably on the twitters.coms, and also on this stupid little podcast sometime in the future.
Brian, Leg, I'm your biggest fan.
You asshole. All right.
See what you did there.
I'll talk to you later, man. Bye. Hey, we're back. Our good friend Mika. What a gem. Always a good time talking to him. Wonderful guy. All right, we're going to do some 5-star questions. And if you want to leave a 5-star question, you can go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review on the show. We'll read them on the show. That's how it works, dude, every week. And let's get right into it, shall we? This is from Rangers Fan Rock again. It says, my favorite podcast host. Can the Red Wings be interested in fielding offers for Dylan Larkin? I feel like he's a great piece for the Rangers to go after. What do you think it would take to get him? I feel like Dylan Larkin is very young, and according to Google.com, he's 24, which is not the he's past his prime, as Fitz would say. His salary is $5.7 million. I don't feel like there's a way they can do that unless it's like Strome in a pick, and I'm not sure that Detroit's going to be willing to trade a player like that for Strome in a pick.
Well, the idea behind the trade would be that the Redskins still aren't close to being competitive, right?
Yep.
So you would think that maybe you can get a guy who is still in his prime, still has a handful of more years in his prime, and you can get him at value. 3 more years, reasonably priced. I just don't think it's a move the Red Wings make.
Agree with
this
you.
Year. I think this year specifically, the Red Wings will keep them. They're going to be better this year because they simply just signed actual hockey players to, you know, fill their roster, unlike last year. I don't think they will entertain trading Larkin until next year's 2021-22's deadline at the absolute earliest. And even then, I just think Larkin's a piece that you would like to build around. He's kind of like a It's like the hockey version of Michael Conforto. Give it even. What? Why?
I just thought it's funny because I'm trying to think of what the hockey version of Michael Conforto is, and I wasn't thinking Dylan Larkin. Does he have that?
I think it's Dylan Larkin.
Oh, okay.
Because like, he's not like when I say Conforto, it's like he's not a star among the league, right?
He's very good.
But he's an all-star caliber player who's very good that would make every team better.
Correct.
But he's not good enough where you're going to get three top prospects for him, but he's not bad enough where you're thinking of trading him either. So it's like he's whatever that next star, there's star,
right?
And then there's that next level down that is, it's better than very good, but it's not star. And that's like the Conforto level that Dylan Larkin is on.
Okay, this is from State of Course. What's next is for Alexis. Okay, so you're 19 years old. You live in Canada. You just became the number one overall pick. This sounds like somebody I know. And you have to relocate to New York. Does mom and dad pack up shop and move? This question keeps going, but I want to interrupt myself and say they live in a mansion that's most likely a gigantic hotel. I do not believe they're moving. Is he going to move in with a Ranger? Moving like the owner, like Sid did? I wonder if Dylan knows who Alexis is. Or Lexi, sorry. If you could choose a Ranger for him to shack up with, who would it be? Who would it definitely not be? Also, Ryan, just try and say Septuagenarian. Do it. Love you guys. K, bye. I tried. Okay. So Kako for last year, for example, shacked up with Brandon Smith. That was sort of like the mentorship this time. I do believe JD said he could live with him already. I don't know how this is going to work, but I'm assuming that's something like that will happen. Or he'll live on his own because he's number one overall pick and he's got nice money now. I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's not like – it's very different for an international player, right? Like Kako, this is a foreign country. This is somewhere that he is completely new to. But let's be honest. It's not the world's biggest leap to go from Canada to the U.S. Like, you're losing your health care. That's about all you're losing. Everything else is just about the same. Both places, not exactly utopias at this point in time. I don't know. I don't know who I would want him to live with. Truba? I feel like Truba is wonderful, but Truba's got a young family of his own or is trying to start a young family, so it's not like he's in a position where he would want a 19-year-old teammate just checking up and
just chilling,
hanging around his house anymore.
Yeah.
But from a mentorship standpoint, Truba would be great. I don't know if I would want anyone living with Chris Kreider.
Chris Kreider, I don't know what happens at his house. I think it changes drastically.
But it's just like, I don't know if you want to expose someone to whatever just weird lifestyle Kreider has. I would buy any story from Chris Kreider's life outside of hockey. You could tell me that guy lives in the woods without electricity, and I'd be like, that makes perfect sense. Or you could tell me that guy literally lives in a library, and I'd be like, that makes perfect sense. Or you could tell me that guy is the Tiger King, and I'd be like, you know what? That makes perfect sense.
I could definitely see him owning a tiger, 100%. No doubt about it.
Any story with Chris Kreider, I'm believing you. I'm not asking questions. I'm just assuming that is the truth. So I don't know if I would want Lafreniere in that household. Buchnevich feels like it would be hilarious. I don't know why.
Because it would just be like sitting on the couch and like looking over and being like, hey,
there'd be a lot of, what's up? There'd be a lot of good morning messages in Russian left in magnets on the fridge.
There you go. That was good.
There'd be a Russian, that was Russian a quality word joke, of the day. Gregory.
Nice job.
Thank you. But yeah, he's the number one overall pick. I'm pretty sure he's going to get to do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Yeah.
And I think
And Montreal isn't Finland, you know? Or not Montreal, sorry.
Right, that's my point. Like he's coming to a country where he has familiarity. Kako came here complete fish out of the water. So like that's a situation where you need someone to give him a kind of guiding hand. I think Lafreniere can figure it out, is my point.
This question is from /9769. Nice. It's a bit long-winded. And he even says this is long-winded. So I'm going to go right to his question. He asks, what are your guys' origin stories and when did the love and obsession start for you? Ryan, are you reading this out loud? Yes, I am. Greg, and also I would love to hear your Mets story. For me, as an 8-year-old, I once spent the opening weekend after the World Series in 86 in Philly as the same hotel as the Mets. So much Coca-Cola for me. Ryan, good luck to your Rays. Keep entertaining speculation and information on what's come with the Blue Shirts. Praise be and thank you. I think we've gone over this before, but I grew up a Ranger fan. I remember watching the game when I was like 5 years old. I was at my dad's house. Surprise. Oh, no, it was an apartment. I don't want to give him credit. And I think that the game was on and I was super pumped. I had a Brian Leetch poster over my bed when I was a kid. Had a love of hockey in high school and then fell back in love around like 2011, 2012. And that's just the whole story.
Yeah, with the Rangers specifically for me, my dad didn't care about hockey, still doesn't care about hockey. So it was kind of just a passing fancy for me to have in the winter months between Mets games. The Mets, my dad was just diehard Met fan, so I grew up a diehard Met fan.
No one would have ever known.
Yeah, that one is so much simpler. I wasn't really big into the Rangers until I got to college, and then I interned with MSG. And I would say I became a lot more interested in the Rangers during that internship because it was my job to become a lot more interested in the Rangers during that internship.
Right. And since Greg worked at MSG, we have a great relationship with them, and they love
fantastic.
Us.
Fantastic. Absolutely. They should. We don't say bad things about MSG. That's the crazy thing.
I know. We defend MSG pretty often. But, you know, I reached out again about having Alexi, some guy, number one overall pick on this. And the exact quote was, I think we're okay. So we'll try again, you know, in the future. They love us. We get along really well. So
interesting. Yeah, I don't. It's not a sexy story. It's just the more you are exposed to the behind the scenes of an organization, I think the more you become interested in that organization. I had a good experience, so I wanted to learn more and become a bigger Ranger fan. Big bang boom.
All right. This question is from Casey from Boston. Greg and Ryan, thanks for maintaining the podcast over many, many months. Cheers to 5 years. Though I haven't been with you from the very start. I started listening after the 2017 draft, and it's been a Tuesday morning requirement from that listen ever since. I'm seriously, to go out of reading this question, that is unbelievable. I think that makes you someone that's put on a list, but I thank you so much for doing this. Ever since I listened to that, I'm perplexed about the Seattle expansion draft coming up. Not for one reason or another, but because I believe past behavior leads to future actions. This all leads me to my point about the expansion. At the time of the Vegas expansion, John Davidson, as president of CBJ, not only gave up William Karlsson, but also a first-rounder to incentivize his selection. Would a bonehead move like this happen again, but this time would it be from the NYR roster? Am I insane for thinking this way? Would love to hear your thoughts. Oh, wow. This is hilarious. Maybe getting Hockey Stat Miner or an OT would help ease my mind on this. Thanks. Well, I got great news. I think we eased your mind earlier. I do think Howden is sort of the go-to pick right now for the expansion draft.
Well, it's not just that. I think it's giving Davidson more credit than he would want in regards to that Karlsson expansion draft trade. Like, John Davidson, I think, in his role as president, is willing to help lay the groundwork for what he wants the organization to do, certain players he values, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think it was John Davidson's brainchild to do that trade. I think Jarmo Kekäläinen had free rein to do what he thought was right and what he envisioned would help his team. And if he had a question for John Davidson, I think Davidson would be more than happy to weigh in. But that was, and maybe this is me just trying to push blame or responsibility away from John Davidson, which is totally possible because I'm a homer, apparently, though I am too negative. So I can't keep up with the criticism.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, but I think it would be like saying, it would be like giving Hal Steinbrenner too much credit for something Brian Cashman did or didn't do. Like, we're all comfortable that Brian Cashman is able to do what he wants when he wants. And I think Jarmo Kekäläinen, we saw that time and time again when he wanted to keep Bobrovsky and Panarin to go for one last playoff run, knowing totally well that he was probably losing both those players in free agency. I think Kekäläinen had the confidence of John Davidson to do just about carte blanche. So I wouldn't – like, sure, it's something to keep in the back of your mind if the Rangers do something interesting when it comes to the expansion draft. But I'm pretty certain that Jarmo was able to do what he wanted to, and that Jarmo Kekäläinen felt like that was a deal that was helping his organization.
Next question is from La Tanaka. It's, hey, Ryan and Greg, love the podcast. This is about third jerseys and next captains, which I know we love to talk about. I know this was covered in the last pod. What do you guys think the chances are the NYR go with three A's this year and then see if making Laf captain in 2021 makes sense? I want to get this out of the way right now because this question is longer. There's no way Lafreniere would be captain in the next year. Like, it just, it's not about that at that point. I don't think they would make a player that's, even with the talent that Lafreniere has, and even if he's going to be the best player on this team for years to come, can you remember a second-year captain ever in any sport, Gregory, ever? I don't think so.
Sid got to see pretty quickly. I think Eichel got to see pretty quickly.
I think Sid's like a different breed. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think we have to worry. I think worrying about who wears the C and who doesn't wear the C is the same as worrying about what the third jersey is going to look like for the New York Rangers.
Right. I just
react to it when it happens. I don't give a shit what happens before that.
I hope they have a third jersey and I hope it's absolutely wild, but I know the Rangers and they won't do it. I don't think Lafreniere is going to be captain next year. And I do think it'll be Mika or Kreider to sort of answer your question again. And it would be nice to have a third again if it's not the Liberty or something else. Again, I want it to be insane. It will never be insane. I saw the Ducks one that's like jumping off ice and it looks terrible, but I kind of love it with all my being. Next question is from ADB1680. Hey guys, big fan of the podcast. Whenever I read Corey Pryman's analysis and scouting reports on the Rangers prospect, everyone except Keandre Miller seems to include some version of the phrase makes up for average skating with great hockey sense. Do the Rangers have a particular preference for skill over athleticism, or is it just hard to find guys who are truly great skaters? Thanks, Alex. I think this is a tremendous question and very informational, but and I think we've mentioned this before, Gregory, but one thing we talked about a lot is it seems it's really hard to find great skaters. And I think even Corey said that on the podcast, where it's like finding good skating is sort of hard at the NHL level. And that's what, if all these players developed this quote unquote great skating ability, they would become elite players, but it's really hard to get there. A lot of people have average skating and then their other skills make up for, or what compromise of what them becoming an NHL player is. Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah, I also think it's like not everyone in the NFL can run a 4.440, right? Like the 4.4, and we saw, Jesus Christ, did we see this with DK Metcalf last
That was
night.
Incredible, man. I couldn't believe it.
Unreal. He did that from like a dead stop, too.
He's a robot. It was LeBron-esque, like the
yeah,
block.
Someone made the comment after the game that like, DK Metcalf ended that insane game with two catches and 26 yards and was still the only thing we could talk about. I do think of skating in the regards, like if we were talking about people who are fast in the NFL or people who, like Derrick Henry doesn't run a 4.440, but he makes up for his lack of breakout speed with just being a brick shithouse that you can't tackle. So like there are, with every player, there's something else you could be doing in your game to make up for a lack of another element, like five tool players, right? Not everyone is going to have every tool, but if one of your tools is exceptional, it'll make up for your worst tool available. When we think of skating, we think of, you know, just going in a straight line very fast or having elusiveness and stuff like that. Obviously, it's much more technical than either you and I understand. And it's a lot more technical than I think a lot of people understand. But you also, it's one of those things where you know it when you see it. I think it's what I test people like to point out the most. I also just think like skating is a catch-all phrase with NHL prospects, it feels like. Because just about, if you really wanted it to, anything could really fall under skating. If you're trying to say a generalization about someone's on-ice performance.
Right, because it's not just the speed or the agility you have. You could just like combine that all into skating, and then you can really kind of criticize it as far as you want.
You see it a lot because it's an easy catchphrase. It's vague enough where none of us really know what you're talking about, but it's also general enough where we have a good idea as to what you kind of mean.
Right.
So it's like something you say where if you say it, I can't say for sure you're wrong because I'm not even sure what you're saying. So you're saying enough of something where I guess you're right.
Welcome to, I think you described the podcast. And anyway, on that note, we're gonna end. We'll be back later this week. Send us things you want to talk about on BSBOT or any weird topics you want us to cover. We'll be back then. Love you guys. Follow me on Twitter @O'Reilly. Follow Greg @BlueShirtsBreak. Bye.